Hi, everyone. I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
That's pretty good, Kevin. I bring people in from Arizona and Florida. Man, oh man.
They're paid employees.
Are they? Anything to boost my ego, huh? It's right. Well, we've come to steps 8 and 9. We've gone through the first 7 steps the last few weeks, and steps 6 and 7 last week we talked about getting rid of character defects and the ones we don't like and the ones we want to keep and whatever. And you know, there was one question I thought was going to be asked, but nobody asked last week, is what if you think it's a good character defect and everybody else thinks it's a bad one? And we never got around to it. So I'm going to leave that in limbo. Maybe I'll leave that for Helen. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Under this step, we make a list of those we had harmed. We ask for strength and courage to become willing to forget resentments and false pride and make amends to those we have harmed. We should not do this step grudgingly or as an unpleasant task to be rid of quickly. We should do it willingly, fairly, and humbly without condescension. The object of this step is to outline and put into practice a working course of conduct which will directly rectify the harm or injury our drinking may have done to others and thus start harmoniously relating us to God and to our fellow man. Members do not arrest alcoholism or gain recovery by merely agreeing with the principles of AA philosophy. They recover only if they live them. We have to live these steps. We have to be willing to humble ourselves on a daily basis to admit when we're wrong. It's hard in a world full of ego. It really is. We always want to be right. We think maybe, you know, I was drunk then and I did something that you could forgive me because I was drunk. But we have to really look at it to see if those persons that we had done those things to are harmed or are still being harmed. And one thing about making that list is after you make that list, it's always good to sit down with your sponsor and talk about the details, because you don't want to go back digging up old graves, you know, just to tell the body you're sorry. We have a list of those we've harmed, and we have our grudge list, and we have a list of those we are financially obligated to. Few of us realize that our own names are head of the list of those we have wronged. We have to admit to ourselves that we beat ourselves up pretty good, you know, because we were expendable. We thought so little of ourselves that nobody would care if we disappeared. And you see that happen today with people who commit suicide. They just don't think anybody else would be harmed, but in reality, all those they left behind are devastated. And so the pain continues, even though the act was a singular act. I had a friend in Alcoholics Anonymous who had been sober 10 years, and he shot himself in the chest after his wife died and killed himself. And I was very angry. Very angry. Because we were really good friends. And how dare he? And it took me many years to get over that. To realize that it wasn't about me. You know, for 10 years he was my friend. And we hunted together and fished together and had a good time together. And we went to meetings together. We went to jail together. He was one of the toughest SOBs I ever knew. He was in prisons for many years. And for him to have done that, I thought would be unbelievable. But we never really know the pain that somebody's ever going through, you know, how much it is. And we would hope that if somebody is in that much pain, that they would talk about it, that they would, you know, share it with someone else in this fellowship. By practicing these steps, we're making amends to ourselves, to our outraged bodies, and to our confused minds, and to our troubled spirits. It's not difficult to list the people who suffered because we drank. Our real problem is to arrive. This is the reason we do this. We arrive at a state of mind that concedes the damage we have done and embraces a sincere willingness to amend it. The question now arises, whose names belong on the list? And the list can include four groups. Families, of course. Wives, husbands, parents, children, brothers, sisters. Damage has been spread over many years. Sobriety in itself is not enough. We should be attentive and considerate. Harmony and cooperation should be established again. I went and made amends to my mom. Sat there and talked about it. You know how mothers are. Oh, don't worry about it. You know, they can forgive anything. And she said, you just keep doing what you're doing. Keep going to those meetings. Keep doing what those people tell you to do, and that will make me very happy. And I said, Mom, I'm really sorry. I know I caused you many nights bad, you know, no sleep. I know that I've taken money from you. I've used you. You were always there. You were the card I always played when I didn't have any other cards to play, you know. I always went back to Mom. And it was wrong. And, you know, and it's a hard thing to sit down and have your mother understand that. But eventually, she understood. And, you know, before she passed away, she told me that you keep going to those AA meetings. She always used to say that. Those people are doing you really good. Friends, people who have been close friends or fellow workers or business associates towards whom we should be friendly but have severed connections with because of resentments or fancied wrongs, the ones we have treated unjustly. You ever work somewhere and you left the place because you were mad, because you thought that they were being mean, or they didn't give you the raise, or they promoted their brother over you. There's a whole list. You know, those things, they may seem insignificant, but they do pop up in your head once in a while, and it becomes a pattern of thinking that you have to lose every time something happens, because you always refer back. That's your reference point. If you don't get rid of the reference point by doing the amend, then it's always going to be there for you, and you just keep rehashing it over and over again when you go through life, you know. Creditors. We do not dodge our creditors. When I came into the program, I owed quite a bit of money. And I told my sponsor, what do I do? And he came over to the house and he sat down next to me as I called each one and tried to make, payments, I guess. And I told each one of them, and there were four major creditors, that I had been drinking, I had used the money, and I didn't have the money, and that I would try to do the best I could with restitution. And all four of them were very happy that I was an Alcoholics Anonymous. They understood, and they said, just do the best you can. It took me 13 years to pay them off in sobriety, and as much as I could. And when I made my last payment, I was kind of scared, so I was going to get drunk. You know. But I was glad that he sat there, you know, and kind of bounced things off each other, you know. So I had to make those financial amends, you know. The deceased, the harm we have done to departed relatives and friends is often a cause of self-condemnation. This should not be. It's a harmful practice. We treat self-condemnation with intelligent prayer. We realize the futility of remorse over wrongs that we cannot amend. We do not allow such errors of the past to impair our future usefulness. Alcoholism is our illness. It accounts for the injury to our family, friends, and those loved ones who have departed. It accounts for our indebtedness. It's responsible for our impaired physical condition. It's brought us irrational thinking, insane behavior, and spiritual illness. We make amends to ourselves, to the personalities we were before becoming alcoholics, by understanding our sickness, eliminating our defects of character back to 6 and 7, which is such a setup for the rest of these steps. You know, working on those defects of character. Intelligent care of our bodies. I always, when I talk to people in the fellowship that I sponsor, I always try to tell them, make sure you see a doctor. Just get a physical. You know, it's so important to keep up on your health. Because if you don't do it, then you have the what ifs and you have the worries and the little things that you just, it's just one more thing to throw on the pile that might get you to go back out drinking again. So a complete physical is something I think that's, you know, something you should do. Restoring our mental apparatus and treating our spiritual illness. We restore our mental apparatus by engaging in people in the fellowship. We run things by our sponsors. We run things by people in the fellowship, by old timers who have experience. And when we do that, we get feedback. It's better to do that one-on-one than to do that in a group. If you throw something out in a group and you're new in the fellowship, you're going to get 20 different responses, and you're always going to take the easiest one, which may not be good for you. So be cognizant of that fact. And just because somebody did it a certain way may not be what you need. That's why it's always good to have a sponsor who knows you. A sponsor who knows whether you can handle a situation like that. Whether you can wade in and do what you need to do. So we then move on to step 9. This is where we make peace with ourselves. This is another aspect of growing up. One of the things that I remember early on in my sobriety, we were in a grocery store and my son took something from the store and didn't pay for it, and we walked outside. And what does AA tell me to do? It tells me to take him right back in the store and tell the woman that he took it. You know, and then when it had happened to me, because if you let things like that slide in your life or in, you know, the lives that you're responsible for, it sets up a reference point too. Well, I got away with it this time. And once you start getting away with little things, they start to become nagging at you. Like I told the guys that I sponsor, you don't take stuff from work. Everybody thinks because they work there that it's theirs. But in every bylaw I've ever seen at work, if you take something, you're liable to be fired. And you have to make amends if you did. And it's humbling to go back to work and say, hey, I took some steel and I built this and I need to pay for it. You know, and other people might think, well, it's irrelevant. They're wealthy. They don't need it. But it's not that what they are. It's what you are. You have to be at peace with what's inside yourself. And peace of mind comes from doing the right thing. My sponsor and I were in a store that I had worked at and I had been fired from. And the man who fired me was distraught over firing me because of circumstances that led up to that firing. I had no recollection of the week prior to working there. And he told me I hadn't been there all week. I thought I was there every day, but I was out drunk every day. And I walked into work and I sat at my station and I started working on something and they come walking in. And the owner of the company said to me, this is Roger, he's our new personnel manager and he'd like to see you in his office. And I went into his office and his first act as a personnel manager was to fire me. And he was distraught. He said, man, I didn't want this job to come in here and fire you. I don't want to ever hurt anybody or do anything to anybody like that. He was beside himself. And a few years later, I was in that store with my sponsor. And Roger was sitting in his office, and my sponsor was with me, and he said, go into his office and tell him and make your amends. And I didn't want to, you know. He said, you told me you would do anything, which I did. He caught me, you know, when the first thing my sponsor ever said to me was, will you do anything to stay sober? And I said, sure. Yeah, busted. He didn't forget. I did, conveniently. So I knocked on the door and I went in. I said, Roger, and he said, oh my God. And I sat down and I said, I want to tell you that when you fired me, that was one of the best things that ever happened to me in my life. And he said, I was so worried that you were going to go and do something. My wife was in the hospital. She had just broken her major surgery and all that stuff. And instead of being in the hospital, I was out drunk every night. And, you know, my whole world's falling apart and poor me. And he said, I always wondered what happened to you. I was worried. It always bothered me. I didn't know if I did the right thing. And I said, you did the right thing by firing me. I said, I wouldn't have put up with my own crap. And he was so happy when I shook his hand and I said, thank you. And he was so happy for me. And when I walked out, I had this big grin on my face, and my sponsor said, how did it go? And I said, it went really well. It was wonderful. Now, in another situation, I was fired from a different job. And I called the employer up, and I talked to the personnel guy who had fired me, and I told him that I was now in the program, and I was, you know, I just wanted to come and apologize. And if he wanted, I would come to his office. And he said, don't ever come around here again. But he had every right to say that. And I had to expect each answer. It's part of growing up. You never get back what you think you're going to get, you know, when you lay that out there. And and he slammed the phone down, and that was the end of that. Still don't know what I did, but I just, you know, yeah, it was one of those, you know. I have an idea, but it ended up in the hospital and all that. But so we make peace with ourselves. If we have cheated, we should make restitution. If we have caused hurt feelings, we should ask forgiveness for them. The list of harms done may be long, and the list of amends is equally long. For every wrong we have done, there is a right we may do to compensate. There is only one exception. We should develop a sense of justice, a spirit of fairness, an attitude of common sense. If our efforts to make amends would create further harm or cause a scandal, we will have to skip the direct amends and clean the matter up under step 5. So, if that amends you're about to make to somebody causes distress or harm to that individual, it is better left unsaid than you go to whoever you do your fifth step with and you share that with them. And maybe at a future date or something happens, you may eventually be able to make that amend, or you may never. But at least you're opening your mouth and you're speaking it out loud. Because when you think about things and you let it roll around in your head, it sometimes gets a lot bigger than it probably is, or we try to minimize it to the point where it's insignificant and it might be something. And so we always try to bounce it off our sponsors or somebody who we trust. A step is not easy. It's not something we carry out immediately. We do it over a period of time. usually opportunities present themselves, and as in my case, it had presented itself a few times, and I was able to sit down and talk to the person. And you know, the funny thing about making amends to people, a lot of them don't even remember it. And they're happy for you. People are really good. They're very happy to see that you're getting along good in your life and things are going good. And you know, you have the occasional one who may not. But you can't go in expecting those results. You go in to clean your side of the street up. You try to project an image, at least, of being an adult now and not a child where you throw a tantrum and you want everything your way. These are restitution steps that we have to make. And you don't have to keep making them if you don't keep doing dumb stuff. That's what my sponsor told me. So if you hate making amends, stop doing dumb stuff. You're going to do dumb stuff anyways. That's what's going to happen because we're human. We make mistakes. We do. You know, I do dumb stuff. People get mad at me, and I don't do it on purpose to hurt anybody, but sometimes I hurt people and they just, you know, that's just the way it is. Some restitution is started upon our acceptance of the A program as a way of life. This is usually quite limited, as not until we have spent several months in AA and have fortified our sobriety with some good fundamental knowledge that we acquire the courage and understanding to be discreet. With Facebook nowadays, it's before they even get to the seventh step or eighth step or ninth step, it's already on Facebook. Please be discreet. By you blowing your anonymity all over Facebook, everybody that's in your list is now considered a member. Be careful. Our sobriety works because of anonymity. We tell people when they come into our fellowship that their anonymity is safe with us. And so they don't have that fear. We try to eliminate that fear, whether it's a doctor, a lawyer, or whoever. Me as a baseball coach, I didn't go around telling all the parents, I'm an alcoholic. It's none of their business. But if they find out you're an alcoholic through other people, hey, our baseball coach is an alcoholic, we better get rid of him. Perceptions. We don't have control over other people's perceptions, only our own. So anonymity has to be where they put the foundation of this fellowship. So if you're blowing all your anonymity and telling everybody, I don't care who knows, you're harming the people that you're associating with, whether you think you are or not. Anonymity is sacred. It's a sacred part of our fellowship. It's as powerful as God. It's humility that we get anonymity. We're confronted with many obstacles in working this step. We find procrastination a hindrance to some members. This should be avoided. On the other hand, there are those who are too ambitious to rebuild and get the things over with at once. That's where a sponsor comes in and helps you to, helps you to slow down. You move too fast, you know. Got to make the morning last. You know. Yeah. Yeah. This is on tape, right? Okay. Maybe I can get something out of that. Remember, in most cases, we will require a lifetime to complete this step because we're always doing it. You know? Some members, under inspiration of the new personalities they are creating, become emotional and act on the spur of the moment. Their hasty action may fall short of accomplishment. Pride's another barrier. Confusion through improper interpretation of the purpose of this step is a common handicap. Older members may be helpful. Meditation and prayer are necessary. No amend should be made that is not preceded by prayer, as it may lack complete purpose and effectiveness. A conscious contact with God in the matter of making amends will not only bring about a more satisfactory result, but will also aid you. Anytime I go to make amends or say anything to someone in the working of a step, I always ask God for help. Please help me with the words. Please help me to understand and not be understood. New people always want to be understood. They want you to understand where they're coming from. And that's the personality change. When we go from always wanting to be understood to going around and trying to understand what's going on around us, we become better. We aspire. We become a level higher. And that's the change. That's the change they talk about in AA. We laugh at the stupid stuff we do instead of loathing the repercussions of somebody maybe laughing at us. And we pick on each other all the time. And we hurt people. But we don't do it because we want to hurt people. We do it because we love them. Everything we do out of love. Love for fellowship, love to see them get better. Love of the book. It's all right. Because of this step, alcoholics have recovered their self-respect. You don't have to walk down the street and walk across the street because somebody else is coming up the street that you don't want to talk to. You can look people in the eye. You can shake people's hands. You can feel just as good as the person you're looking at. You don't have to hide in shame anymore because you've talked to them, because you've laid it out. It's all about growing up. Most of us underestimate its power to change our attitude towards God, our fellow man, and everyday circumstances of sober living. Our bid for a new lease on life for the tolerance and forgiveness we expect from others should prompt us to respond with tolerance, forgiveness, and amends. It's funny, I think I mentioned this last week, it's funny that, you know, we come into this fellowship and somebody drives in front of us or somebody does something to us and we want to kill them. We go from zero to anger immediately. And that's not the AA way. We have to be better than that. We have to rise above that to stay sober. We have to learn a new way of life, because if we're still stuck in that lower way of thinking, that old way of thinking, we get ourselves into trouble. And then we have to make amends because we ended up punching somebody or yelling at them or acting like a fool in front of them because we didn't get our way, or somebody cut us off, or we have to wait in line, and you know, and how many groceries do they have, and you know, and is it check day, and is it all the seniors are there, and I'm one of them now, and you know, they shop once a month and they have two carts full, and oh my God, they have three cashiers, and you know, and all those things. You know, I think your Linda said it one day. She said, when I retired, I didn't realize how slow people drove during the day. And it's true. I'm one of them. I'm a slow driver anyways. And everybody else is trying to get to work and they're late, but they always leave late. If they would just leave 5 minutes earlier, they'd be okay. But damn it, they're going to stay home and they're going to do it that their way. You know. It's 5 minutes, you know. So we have to rise above that, because that anxiety that we carry the rest of the day, sometimes when we did that before, our natural instinct was to grab a drink. I need to relax. Instead of, God, please take this, make this full drive right, or what the hell? And my favorite prayer is, Jesus Christ, you know? Or, what are you doing? And he must laugh like hell at me, you know? Because I'm not perfect either. I have anxiety and I want what I want when I want, because that's the way we were raised. Microwave sobriety, they used to call it. You know, put it in for 2 minutes and you're sober. You know, instead of putting it in the oven and letting it cook all day like they used to do, like my grandmother used to do, you know. Now we want it right now. And we have to learn to slow down. We have to learn that it's okay. You know, we don't slow down to the point where we're just standing there. And people say, what's wrong? We slow down to the point where we put one foot in front of the other and we just do what we need to do. Airports suck. That's why, that's my biggest one. So I can tell you, you know, that anxiety I get in airports is sometimes overwhelming. And sometimes I just put one foot in front of the other. You know, just to get it done. Our bid for a new lease on life for tolerance and forgiveness we expect from others should prompt us to respond with tolerance, forgiveness, and amends. I just read that. A teaches us that to live and let live is to safeguard our sobriety. Resentful attitudes towards others will defeat our recovery. We correct this attitude in the practice of this step. Amends integrate our personalities by harmonious, helpful relationships with God and the victims of our alcoholic illness. We are trying to put our lives in order. We do this through maximum service to God and the people around us. This, we believe, is the purpose of this step. And I think that's all I got on this.
Thank you. Thank you.
It didn't want to work.
Next, we do the question and answer portion. Is there any questions?
I'm a comment.
Who raised their hand? Who raised their hand?
What are you doing?
I'm coming, Lord. I saw you. You're the first one to raise your hand.
There.
Thanks, Jim. I'm Laura. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Laura.
Suppose you have someone that you work with, and all of a sudden they have a strange attitude. They're treating you differently. They seem to be really holding a grudge. You're not really sure what you've done. Is it, do you say, hey, what's going on? Have I done something? Do you make amends to someone even if you're not really sure what you did do?
Anybody that I talk to or work with, I always go with the direct approach. What's the problem? If you detect, we intuitively know how to handle situations. If you detect someone's treating you differently, there's definitely a problem. So just, it's always just direct.
And then you get the people where you do say, oh, I'm so sorry I behaved badly. Oh, don't worry about it. It's nothing.
Right.
But you know.
But you know.
Yeah.
I had a situation like that where I kept asking this person, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And they said, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. So then I told their sponsor. And now they hate me. But that's okay. I'd rather have people hating me that are staying sober than dying. I've seen too many people die in this fellowship because things went unsaid. We are here because we communicate. We do this together. We don't do this separately. You know, if you hurt other people's feelings, so be it. You'd rather them be sober for 10 years, then you can make amends because they're still alive instead of saying, you know, this is a life and death situation. You know, a lot of people, people who have been around for a very long period of time in fellowship know this through experience, that if we look the other way, it's not good.
Anyone else? Good one.
I'll shoot them for you.
TJ Alcoholic.
Hi, TJ.
Step says, wherever possible. It doesn't say whenever possible. Can you speak to that, please?
Did that answer your question? I don't know the difference. I'd never thought about it. It says wherever, I guess if the situation arises and you can do it, you do it. Maybe that's why it's wherever, because you're in a specific spot. Where? So wherever possible. As far as deceased, they say to, because you can't do that directly, they say to write a letter, you know, and burn it. But most things, most amends, if you have any question or not whether you should do it, it is always good to run it by your sponsor. I saw the smirk. Okay, we'll talk later.
Anyone else?
Yeah, when would be a time reference, where would be a place. You guys don't have to make amends to anybody, huh? You're all good. Liars.
Alright, Kevin, what's your question?
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. When you're working with people and sometimes they have a question on whether they should make an amends or shouldn't make an amends, do you help guide the person with that decision?
Most decisions that I make or that I talk to the person that I'm working with is through experience. So it's usually not something that I would think, or if I don't know the answer to, I will ask my sponsor. And hopefully he's had some kind of experience with that. I can tell you this, and this may spark a little bit of controversy. I had done something that was did not make the law enforcement happy and would have cost me some jail time. And when I went to my sponsor about it, he said to me, after I talked about the amend, he said to me, would you be best served in prison or would you be best served with your family? Consequently, he had a debate with his sponsor and they came to the consensus that I would be best served to be with my family. That would be, I was going to go either way. It didn't matter to me because I wanted to make sure that I did the fellowship the way that, you know, they were teaching me. I know there are other people who have gone the other way and have gone to prison. I sponsored a guy. He spent eight months in prison after he came in the program and had a year. So the circumstances are important. And be mindful of that because you could make an amends that might harm other people. You know, and you know, you have to really weigh it. This isn't something that it's not something you have to do right now. It's something that can be thought over, and it's something, you know, that you can pray about and meditate about until you come to the conclusion of what you want to do. It's what your sobriety can do. So I don't know if that's answered anybody's question, but if I don't have experience in that type of amend or whatever, I will ask. You know, I will ask my sponsor. And if he has it or if he's heard of it. And nothing gained or lost while we're waiting for an answer from either a higher power, a group, or our sponsors. I'm fortunate to be in a lineage of people that I trust, people I sponsor, and people that I work with that actually help me out more sometimes than I help them. So I run things by people. You know, they always say I'm the biggest whiner of them all, but it's all good because we're all thinking. You know, we're thinking about issues And sometimes we're learning how to develop a sense of humor and not take ourselves so seriously. We might think that what we did was so egregious that we should be jailed, flogged, put on the rack. Nobody will understand. And someone else might look at it and say, really? I did that 100 times. It's nothing. So it's always best to run that by, you know, that person. Run that by a sponsor. And a lot of that kind of stuff comes out in the fifth step. By the time you get to the eighth step, it's usually been discussed and, you know, you do it or you don't, depending upon what the outcome may be sometimes. Anything else?
Have you ever had the other side of that, where somebody who's in the program a month or two and is really a zealot about this and trying to clear their conscience, and they make amends without consultation?
Yeah, we've had some disasters. You know, they went and did it before they sat down and talked about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and but those things too happen. You know, it, just because you're a zealot and you're, you know, what we call an AA Nazi, I guess. You know, dot the I on this and whatever. But we're human beings too, and we're gonna screw up. You know, it's just the way it is. Nobody's perfect. If you do it and you screw it up, don't worry, we'll go over it. We'll fix it. Everything can be fixed, you know. If that person didn't take it well, there may be always an opportunity for a future amends.
You know? And what happens if they have legal consequences to that?
Consequences are consequences. We are responsible now for our actions.
Okay.
So, and I try to tell the people that I sponsor that everything you do now, my family used to just wait, they hoped I would drink so I would rejoin the herd, you know. And they made fun of me, and they were the ones who had to make amends to me when they came in the program. You know, what did I say? I'm just glad you're sober. Because I was. Because you weren't torturing me anymore. You know?
That's great.
And there, and the spirit, you get these spiritual benefits, you know, this ease of comfort that you feel when things happen like that. When someone makes amends to you, or you create a great dialogue with someone, or you make a friend with someone that you may have been an enemy with because of the transgression or whatever it might be. And it's a good feeling inside. It's when A moves from here, up here, down into here, because you start to feel sobriety instead of acting, you know, instead of just going through the motions.
All right. Anybody else have any other questions?
All right.
Yay!
Thanks, Jim.